Well, hello there, TGP. It's Monday, November 15th, 2021. This is In the Know, episode 21. I've got the heat on, I'm listening to Christmas music, and I have been for 2 weeks now. Not the heat always, but the Christmas music. I've determined at this point in my life, there are two types of people. There are those who decorate right after Halloween. That's one type of person. And the other type of people are just people that are wrong. So our house is partially, almost fully decorated. The only thing that we lack really is a Christmas tree. And crazy enough, nobody is selling them right now unless you're going for one of the fake ones, which, you know, who would do that, right? All right. Few announcements. First, January 7th, Women's Night of Worship. Please, ladies, make plans to attend. February 4th and 5th, 2022 is going to be the Abide Women's Conference. Over the next couple of months, we're going to be putting together some men's and women's gatherings, and we'll do more about those. But we did this last year, and it was really life-giving and good. We kind of alternated weeks. We kind of paused life groups and then just had all the men meet 1 week, and then the next week, all the women met in the church. I think that would be a really great thing to do again, just to build relationships outside of life groups. And the last thing is I still have copies of Gentle and Lowly and Rediscover Church available. And so if you're interested in picking those up, I would love to get those in your hand. Really good resources, and they're worth your time. And they're not terribly difficult reads. This is not, you know, you're not reading an 800-page systematic theology book, but they're good and helpful, and they'll encourage you. So Gentle and Lowly and Rediscover Church, I have those available. Let's jump into a little bit of sermon recap now. So let's talk first about what the servant said about Abraham and Isaac. And so I said yesterday in the sermon that I would do more on his words that he speaks to Rebekah's family. I would do more on that in the newsletter. And so let's talk about the beginning of his like dinner explanation of why he was there. So as with everything else in the Bible, the details of his words are intentional. I was greatly helped by Bruce Waltke in this regard, and much of what I'm going to share here comes directly from his own exposition. First, the servant mentions that God has blessed Abraham richly. He mentions specifically Abraham's wealth when he talks about male and female servants, donkeys and camels, and all of the things that he has, and with like the great amount of camels and servants he brought with him, this kind of retinue, if you will. And then he mentions Isaac's position as the sole heir, which that's important. He's the only son. He then says, Waltke then says, by mentioning his master's request that Isaac marry within his own family and his refusal to allow marriage with the Canaanites, the servant assures them that Rebekah's children will be the sole heirs. When the servant speaks of Sarah's old age, Waltke says that this is to assure them that Isaac is not too old to marry Rebekah. I mean, remember, Abraham was 99, so he was a good deal older when, and Sarah was 90 when they had Isaac, and by this time Isaac's about 40. And so if it had been earlier in their lives, Isaac might even be in his 70s coming to marry someone who's a younger woman. And so he's trying to assure them that, no, it was later in life. It was a son of their old age. And then finally, when the servant mentions that Abraham made him swear an oath, Waltke says this would be a compliment to the family that Abraham is so seriously committed to arranging his son's marriage among his relatives. So everything, if you just go back and read that, all of that's intentional. All of it has a purpose. He's not saying these things just for no reason. It's all intended to present the family with assurances that, number one, Rebecca would be provided for. Number two, her children would be provided for. And number three, that her children would be the heirs of the blessing of Yahweh upon Abraham and Isaac. It was all specifically aimed at inclining them toward assenting to the marriage. And I just thought that was an interesting thing. It was too long to add to the sermon yesterday, but it was incredibly interesting to me to think about why he said what he said. So let's talk about next marriages outside the covenant family. One or two of the commentaries I read last week made a big deal of Abraham's desire that the marriage be kept, as it were, within the sphere of blessing upon Shem rather than the sphere of cursing upon Canaan. And that you can read about that in Genesis 9, verses 24 through 27. They draw a parallel between this desire of Abraham expressed there, the prohibitions later in the Pentateuch of when Moses tells Israel they're not to marry outside of Israel, and then Paul's admonition that marriages should be, as he says, only in the Lord, 1 Corinthians 7:39. Now, some throughout history have misused, especially that middle one, the prohibition from marrying outside of Israel that was expressed in the Old Testament, to develop a poor theology of interracial marriage. This is silly and wrong. This was never about race. It was always about worship. It was clear that if Israel intermarried with the nations, that they would end up bowing down and worshiping the gods of those nations. And at its worst, this actually ends up happening with Solomon. You can read about that in 1 Kings. I've got a link in the newsletter. In the same way, Paul tells the widows in 1 Corinthians 7 that they should only remarry in the Lord. He's clearly intending that believers should marry exclusively other believers. There's no situation in which a believer in Jesus should knowingly marry an unbeliever. This is sin, and it makes every facet of the Christian life difficult, from raising children to involvement in church to leading or submitting within the marriage to Bible reading, and it gives an evangelistic tone to the marriage rather than one of serving the Lord together. Like, marriage is that important. Dale Davis says it this way in his commentary on verses 1 through 9. He says, verses 1 through 9 recognize that marriage is essential for covenant continuity, but they also seem to recognize that a wrong-headed marriage can destroy covenant fidelity. And then later he goes on, that's all well and good. If you are bound to Christ by covenant, you must only marry someone who is also one of Christ's covenant people. But what if, to take it from the fellow's viewpoint, there's no Rebecca? What if, in the providence of God, no Christian girl ever comes across the radar screen of your life as a viable candidate? What then? There's an interesting snip in Ned Stonehouse's biography of Gresham Machen. Machen was New Testament professor at Princeton Seminary and later taught at and led Westminster Seminary. But at one point, Machen was apparently quite serious with a lady from Boston. She was said to be intelligent, beautiful, exquisite, a hard combination to beat. They were quite devoted to each other for a long time, though the relationship never blossomed into an engagement. The reason was that she was a Unitarian. She apparently made a real effort to believe, but could not bring her mind to a point where she could share Machen's Christian faith. Machen, on his part, could not think of uniting his life to someone or to one who could not share basic agreement with him regarding his faith. So the relationship was ended. That is hard. Sometimes faithfulness may require that, however. Marriage matters. The wrong kind can sabotage covenant faithfulness for years to come. What a wonderful picture of the importance of godly, believing marriages. Sometimes I imagine we get the notion that marriage matters so much that we feel like we ought to do it at any cost. Machen's life seems to say the opposite. Marriage, in fact, is so important that we should abstain from it if it means being, as Paul says in 2 Corinthians 6, unequally yoked with unbelievers, uniting ourselves at that deep of a level with someone who is not spiritually like us in the most important ways, who doesn't treasure at their heart what we treasure. Marriage is that important that it's actually worth not doing if there's not another believer to marry. The last thing that I want to hit on one more time is the repetition of events in this story. As I've looked more at my study materials today, I actually feel more confident about what I said about Moses' reasoning for recording this repetition in such detail. So here's what two of the authors say. Bruce Waltke says, "The repetition of the story is necessary to persuade the family to acknowledge the hand of the Lord. His detailed recounting of Abraham's faith, of his own prayers, and of his providential meeting with Rebekah challenges the listeners to recognize God's approval of this marriage." In other words, this is designed to press Rebekah's family toward the same conclusions the servant has come to, and which Abraham seems to have arrived at far earlier. God was providing a wife for Isaac. Namely, he was providing Rebekah for Isaac. And then Alan Ross says, "The servant's speech from verses 34 to 48 retraced the events that had transpired. Here, the exposition should repeat the significant motifs as well, for the repetition in the narrative was deliberately designed to emphasize them." Here's the theme of emphasis. The biblical writer wanted to emphasize and highlight the powerful, unique working of God in arranging these circumstances and the worship that resulted from the witnessing of his experience of God's sovereign hand. And so it is that God worked in the circumstances themselves, in the retelling of the story, and in the hearts of the hearers to bring about the result not only that Abraham and his servant wanted, but ultimately that God himself intended. Not only that, but the emphatic nature of this narrative is helpful because it reminds us of the fact that our lives are equally guided by the sovereign hand of God in all things. May God grant that this thought would comfort you this evening as you lay your head on your pillow, and that it might foster deep contentment in your heart. Have a great week. I love you, people.